welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It's episode number 414. My name is James Gilmore, and joining me today, it's the return of the Fox.
Yeah!
The Glen Fox, and the also return of Emily Soden.
Hello there!
No!
I have infected Emily.
I thought I'd, you know.
You've been playing Siren on the PS2, and you've gone and warp-jumped into Emily's head and controlled her voice box.
That's exactly what happened.
Don't do that. Oh, now my doorbell's going. Hang on a minute. Sorry about that, guys. I got beard oil through the post. I'm leaving this in the podcast because it's Thursday and I'm off tomorrow and I've got that slightly cavalier devil may care attitude. Let the veil of professionalism fall. What have you all been doing, Glenn? Where were you last week?
God, that's a good question. Where was I last week?
Can't be anywhere good.
Why do I have no recollection? Was I off? Was I in space?
Well, you weren't here. I'll say that much.
I think you were just busy, weren't you?
You might have just been busy doing work things.
Yeah, I think that's why it wasn't anything exciting.
Okay, good. This is as depressing as Emily's answer last week when I was like, so what did you do while I was away? And she was like, work?
Yeah. Well, we're basically life, just robots. Video game reviewing robots.
I'm worried you're all those characters, like, you know how the Schrodinger's cat thing, the idea that when you leave a room, everything stops existing.
Yeah.
So, Glenn, you only exist when I look at you or speak to you exactly. down the computer. After that, it's like, what have you done? You're like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm not real.
Jesus. It's like a really bad Dark Mirror, a Black Mirror episode.
Yeah. Otherwise known as a Black Mirror episode. Oh! I'm just kidding. I quite like some of them. They're quite good. It's but hit and miss. Anyway, we're wildly off topic before we've even introduced the topic. Mobile games and all of that business. We've got a bunch to get through this week, as always. Some news about World of Tanks and Warhammer 40K doing a big old collision smasheroo franchise mashup. We've got some stuff about the Talos Principle has just jumped onto the iPhone and the iPad and the Android devices. Is it any good? Let's find out. Into the Dead has got a sequel. We're going to chat about that as well. And Glenn's been playing something to do with Fire Emblem on the Switch and whether that's any good. Plus, we actually talked to the creators of the Talos Principle and asked them how they crammed that big old game onto the iPhone. But first, it's the news. Prepare to see rhinos rolling onto the fields, the battlefields, I should say, of World of Tanks Blitz. There's a new update which is coming up, which is going to introduce Warhammer 40k vehicles into the world of tanks. Blitz, I guess. this is the mobile version of World of Tanks, which has been out for a couple of years now, and is actually surprisingly good. There's a video up, which we've got up on the site, which is talking about the dudes from Games Workshop and how they're like, hey, tanks, bringing them in. Because I did like looking, at least, and painting and that, the 40k models. And I always like the tank designs. Tank designs are kind of wicked. I quite like the idea of driving a rhino into the face of, like, a real tank. I'm going to say a Panzer, because that's a tank brand I've heard of.
It is a tank brand. That's all I know about tanks.
Probably model. You can tell I'm not a military aficionado. But you can go out and have a look at the trailer, if you like, showing you what it's going to look like. And plus, there's this big old, like, diorama thing that they've built up in Games Workshop in Nottingham, which shows this ridiculous amount of tanks all on a table. And if you are into the old model thing, it's pretty sweet. So check that out over on PG at the minute. Little follow-up as well. Thimbleweed Park, which we've talked about and reviewed in previous episodes of the show, is now out on Android. Previously, it was a Switch and iOS and PC only thing. But now you can get it on Android too. We liked it, thought it was fun. You reviewed it, Em?
I did, and it's worth it.
Yeah, it's a bit of a lark. It's £8.99 at the minute, which obviously isn't the cheapest, but it is a fun little point-and-click adventure. Check out our review on PG and the video review on AppSpy as well. Now, Glenn, you've gotten your gropey old hands on a new Fire Emblem game. This is a big deal.
Yeah, except it's not really Fire Emblem.
Oh, do tell. What platform and what is it?
Okay, so it's Fire Emblem Warriors. It's coming to Switch next week on the 18th.
All right.
And it's basically a follow-up to Hyrule Warriors, which came on the Wii U a couple of years ago, and 3DS about a little while after that.
That's the one where they made Zelda all hackety-slashety, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So basically the Dynasty Warriors team got the Zelda IP. I think Nintendo probably let them have it a bit, didn't just sort of let them steal it.
And sneak then into the office like Dennis Nedry, stealing exactly. files of DNA.
I think they actually asked and were like, yeah, you can do that. And then they made like a Dynasty Warriors thing in the Zelda universe. And it was really, like, I was very surprised by it. It was really cool, really fun. And it like did a lot with, it was a lot of fun, like, to see the Zelda license used differently. And it like, it worked. Mm-hmm. It felt very Zelda. It felt very Dynasty Warriors. And I loved it.
So much more of an arcadey experience, like, rather than the standard RPG business.
Yeah, basically, yeah. So, I mean, like, just to give a quick recap on what Dynasty Warriors is, effectively, it's like an RTS, but you play as a unit.
Mm.
You run around capturing forts by, you know, killing people. It's hack and slash, so it's just, like, ridiculous combos you're pulling off. And
it's known for its, like, insane volume of enemies on screen. It's just, like, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, and especially with the new tech as well, as if they've got increased generations, like, the new Dynasty Warriors will just have thousands of people on screen.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like, there's parts where you just can't see the ground for units. And so you basically just, you run from fort to fort, capturing them. As you're battling, like, submissions appear that might say, you know, one of your units are in trouble, you've got to run back and help them, or you've got to kill someone quickly before they kill someone else, that sort of stuff. It's all very dramatic.
So it's that, but with Fire Emblem this time.
Yeah, and actually, in many ways, Fire Emblem is a more natural fit for a Dynasty Warriors type game than Zelda, because, you know, it's already got, like, loads of units. It's already based on big wars.
Yeah, yeah.
In many ways, it is a more natural fit, and the result is kind of a mixed bag for me. So I'll start with positives. They've adjusted the formula a little bit to add in some Fire Emblem stuff. You can now, at any point in battle, pause the game and direct your units about on the battlefield. And it's very much Fire Emblem in the way it works. So you can see them as little sprites on, like, a grid-based map of the battle.
Mm-hmm.
And you just select a unit, and then you move the arrow pointer that appears to any point in the grid, and they'll go there. And you might be able to set them, like, sub-missions, like, at that location there might be an enemy, you can just order them to attack it, or there might be an ally unit they can guard. So you can order them about the battlefield at any point, and when they've completed an objective that you gave them, they'll shout in the game. You'll just hear them go, "Okay, now what?" And then you can order them to do something else.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing is they've brought the weapon triangle back. So swords beat axes, axe beats spears, and spears beat swords. And they've brought that
the rock game. Paper scissor thing. Yeah. I remember that. Even the Mobile Light version that they had recently had a similar thing in it.
Yeah, exactly. So they've brought that back, and they've done a kind of clever thing. Like, they've tied it so that if a fort captain has an axe, all of the units in the surrounding area have an axe too.
Okay.
So if you're a sword wielder and you go after the axe wielder, your chances are you're going to have a much better time, like, against them. Like, you do more damage, they do less damage to you.
Mm.
Whenever you select a unit, you can see on the map which units are weaker against them and which units are stronger against them, so you can order them around with that in mind.
Okay, handy.
Which is pretty cool. And finally, obviously, there's a shit ton of Fire Emblem characters in it, which is another big Fire Emblem thing. And the cool thing about this game is you'll see Fire Emblem characters from different games in the franchise, like, interacting with each other.
Do they stop on the battlefield and have an angsty argument and then hug?
Yeah. Yeah, that does happen occasionally.
Wicked.
But it's sort of that the loading menu is kind of little skits that play. So it's just all telling you the sort of either the plot of the battle that's coming ahead, and also just little character moments. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's fun because there are characters that are actually quite similar, because there's only a few archetypes that get flogged over and over and over again in JRPGs. So it's quite fun when you see, like, these two characters that are actually very similar, like, arguing with each other, and they've never actually interacted before. So that's quite nice, and Fire Emblem fans will like that. But the plot itself is really, really dire, like, really bad, to the point where if I actually bother to watch the cutscene before the battle, it actually puts me off playing, because I'm just like, this is dreadful stuff. It's like a free-to-play mobile game plot. Like, they're just trying to come up with a reason for why all these Fire Emblem characters are meeting, despite the fact they're in different universes. And they're just like, oh, this portal's opened, and now all characters from different universes are coming in, and now we've got to try and close it, and we've all got to work together.
This sounds like the Injustice series to me.
Yeah.
Oh, it's Dark Superman is meeting up with the downloadable DLC character Link in Soul Calibur, and now they're going to say something awkward at each other for two lines.
Yeah.
And then we're going to get to why we're really here, which is just fighting.
Yep. And it's basically like the plot of Tales of the Rays, which has recently relaunched on mobile, the free-to-play one. I think you played it, James.
I did.
But literally just that. You're gathering your, you know, different units from different games to save the world. So yeah, that is not a positive aspect of the game at all. Like, maybe Fire Emblem fans will love it, but I think anyone else is just going to find it gobbledygook and real mess and struggle to actually follow what the hell's going on.
Okay.
They've made a lot of effort to make the game feel a little bit more Fire Emblem in the stuff I've mentioned earlier, but ultimately you are kind of just running around hack and slashing thousands of enemies each battle and taking certain points of the map. The game doesn't really deviate from that. There's very few new mechanics that are introduced as you go along.
Okay.
It is a criticism in a way, but also like this is Dynasty Warriors. That's how it works. And yeah, that's yeah, kind of that's what you're getting.
I mean, the last
for.
Time I played actual Dynasty Warriors was back on the PS2, one of those ones. Mm. I forget which number. And it's very clear what the game is actually about. Have you ever tried any of these ones, Em? Or does this kind of random hack and slash stuff just put you to sleep?
It just puts me to sleep. I'm not even going to dance around the question.
I just woke you up just then, in fact, asking you the question.
Yeah, I was having a nice little nap, you bugger.
But stories, they meet up on the battlefield and they have a little argument.
I don't care.
They do.
Just go and have a pint and just sort your issues out.
Wow. I'd like to see you writing that JRPG.
The turn-based battling system could be like an argument.
Yeah, just Cloud and Sephiroth. Option 4 is just like, pint? ?
Always pint.
Game
every
over.
Every single option.
The end. Okay, so, yeah, as you said, a bit of a mixed bag going on there then. You've got a preview, which you've written up, which is currently available on PG, and obviously I'm sure we'll be reviewing it when it actually comes out. 18th, did you say, next week?
It's actually September 28th, so that's just the review embargo. So it's not out for a while.
Okay, not out for a while. So these are all just preview thoughts at the minute, and we'll have to see how it turns out in the final review code launch build. So Fire Emblem Warriors, keep your eyes out for that very soon. Talos Principle is a game that's been out on a number of platforms. Now we've seen it arrive on PCs, on consoles as well. It turned up on the Shield Android tablets, and now it's coming over to the App Store on iOS, iPads, and iPhones. I'm joined today by Alan Ladovac, who's the CTO from Crow Team, the guys responsible for the Talos Principle. Thanks for joining me today, Alan.
Thank you for having me.
Now, the game itself, obviously it's been out for a while and most people are familiar with it, but just to give everyone a rundown of what we're talking about here, you were working on Serious Sam, which is quite sort of a violent, hectic, funny game, and then you released this, which is a much more thoughtful, contemplative, cerebral puzzler. How did you get from Serious Sam to the Talos Principle?
So that's actually a very interesting question. Because when we were working on Serious Sam 4, we wanted to give the player a little bit of a break between all this action that happens. And we came up with some rather inventive mechanics for puzzles. But we wanted them to be very simple puzzles. And as our lead game designer, Davor Tomčić, when he was making those prototype puzzles, he got carried away and he made more and more complex puzzles. And it turned out that those very complex puzzles were actually super interesting for everyone to play. So, and one thing led to another, and we decided to create a completely new game based only on those puzzles.
Right. I don't want to spoil too much because some people may not have played it already, but there's a sort of a historical influence here. You're going back to like references to ancient Egypt and things like that. Where did all those come from?
Well, we didn't want to just make a game very raw and just give just the puzzles for the player. We wanted to make a very interesting story. And since these, all those philosophical questions that's been discussed in there and the various themes of humanity and transhumanity and all those things that are touched in the story, those are all the things that we talk about every day in the office when we like have my lunch and talk about stuff. So we wanted to have a story that touches on all those subjects, and we thought that it really makes a great story for a game that's about complicated puzzles. So we brought, we asked Tom Joubert and Jonas Kirtis to help us write the story, and they really liked this idea, and they created this story in the sense that we wanted.
When you begin the game, the first thing you see is sort of the camera looks at the hand, and you realize that you're an android, or at least you have a mechanical hand, and you're wandering around this maze, which appears to be this sort of almost Greek ruins, it looks like, but a kind of an ancient environment populated by these curious little sci-fi objects that are floating around, these balls which are trying to fire at you, and cannons, and the objective is to try and make your way through the puzzles without getting destroyed, and open up gates and freeze the items, the objects, as you go. Now, originally, this was a game that was played on mouse and keyboard or dual sticks. Now, you're faced with a touch screen as a control system. No buttons or anything like that. What's the trickiest aspect of making this particular game work on a touch screen?
Well, touch screen is something that we started addressing very early on, even before the PC version of the game was released, as we realized that because it's always hard to make real action game on a touchscreen, but this kind of game, because there are some areas in the game where you have to be rather quick in some actions, but it's nowhere near what you would have in Serious Sam. So there's an opportunity to have a more relaxed user interface. So we tried to figure out what we could do, and it turned out that we came up with pretty nice ideas to make all the actions more intuitive than with just a plain virtual gamepad be. So we made all this where you tap to jump somewhere, and this also influenced back towards the game, but even in the PC game you have markers that tell you when you're going to jump and all those things. But we saw the potential. We wanted to make touchscreen games because we wanted to bring our passion to the mobile as well, and this all just fits very nicely with one thing with another.
Okay, I played a bunch of it today, and it was interesting because I've played the PS4 version. Is the one that I came into contact with first, and it's interesting comparing and contrasting the two. I think there are some things that are actually easier on mobile that feel more streamlined, and some things that are a little tougher. For example, picking up the little tripod objects that allow you to freeze enemies and then placing them by simply tapping the enemy you want it to affect, that's very intuitive and very easy, and like that makes great sense on the touchscreen. When it comes to turning around and running away from things, I found that a little bit tougher using the touchscreen controls. Often there are compromises, and old, you know, podcast listeners who are familiar with me know that I always bang on about this, but do you find that first-person shooters or first-person games on touchscreens are inherently compromised, or do you think that there is a way to make them work as well as they do on other platforms?
Well, one thing I can say for sure that we would like to make them work, but that's quite a challenging task, as you have probably noticed. And it's something that's still in front of us. For right now, we would like to make sure that Talos works great on all devices. And I think we're pretty much there. As you said, there's upsides and downsides to the touchscreen. But I think the things that you see as problems for you right now, like running away, I think with a little bit more practice, you can see that it can get easier. It's all, of course, it's never as easy as just pressing back on the gamepad.
Sure. And we should say that you do also have the option included to switch to a more traditional dual stick control system if you wanted to, which I also gave it a go. And immediately that part became easier, but then the picking up and placing objects was slightly trickier. So it's always that slight trade-off between the two and what works best for you. Price point's always a tricky thing to get right when you're bringing things onto a marketplace which is primarily free to play at this point. So you've gone in at £4.99 or $4.99, which seems to me very reasonable given the size of the game. Was it tough to pick a price point, or did you have a good idea going in, like, this is what it's going to cost, or did you ever consider making it free to play and unlocking chapters or anything like that?
James, Ante here. Mind if I ask this one?
Of course, go for it.
Yeah, the price was always a challenge, and we didn't have any idea what we are doing here because this is our first release on iOS. So we researched a lot, and our main goal was that we liked the game so much, and we were satisfied with the success so far, but we always felt that this game deserves an even bigger audience. So when deciding on pricing, we wanted to make it really affordable for pretty much anybody to be able to pick it up and play it. because this game was made for everybody, and I cannot think of a single person that wouldn't enjoy it.
I find it very interesting that within the space of 2 weeks, we've had two first-person, very cerebral puzzlers come out on mobile, because obviously Talos Principle this week, but previously we've just had the launch of The Witness, Jonathan Blow's game, which is, again, a game where you're a first-person perspective dude wandering around what looks like a kind of abandoned area, solving puzzles to unlock doors and gateways. Is that an unusual just coincidence that happens to have happened at the same time, or is everyone thinking, hey, we're going to bring our sedate puzzlers to touchscreen and this is where they should live?
Well, good point there. It's no coincidence. Jonathan basically stole a lot of our ideas and implemented his own. But we met him with him on a couple of occasions and became close friends, so we let him slide.
Oh, that's very good of you. That's nice. I'm sure he appreciates that. The other thing that we cover on Pocket Gamer, as well as mobile stuff, we also do talk about VR. And have a VR section. I know that this has been talked about in relation to VR. How far along are you? Have you already released a build for VR?
We have scheduled the VR version to be released on the 17th.
Oh, okay.
For the PC.
Right. Is there any consideration that it might find its way onto something like the, you know, the Samsung Gears? Or I know Oculus has just recently announced that it's doing a standalone VR headset for $200. Like, could it make its way onto there, perhaps?
Well, it remains to be seen, but right now we see that the PC hardware is more suitable for this kind of games because everything is based on the realistic graphics, and it becomes very, very hard. I mean, it was quite a challenge to bring this to the iOS devices. If you imagine that it would have to run at 90 FPS and twice rendered for two eyes, then it gets even more complicated. So at this point, we've been toying with that idea, but we haven't been touching any plans to make VR versions for mobile for now.
Well, last question. Regarding the gameplay itself, it's almost easy to talk all about that and not focus on the story aspect, because that is one of the interesting draws of this game, the narrative. It exists alongside the gameplay, and you do occasionally get it overlapping with voiceovers from this god voice in the sky telling you what to do, and you do eventually encounter a character as well. But how important was it for you guys to communicate the story? Because, as other people have pointed out, you pick it up by accessing terminals and things like that, but it's not necessarily guaranteed you'll encounter these terminals. It could be possible to miss them as you wander around the world. So how important is understanding the narrative to the gameplay experience?
Well, there are some secret terminals. I think most of them really are in plain sight. And we didn't really intend for the player to miss them, but more to allow the player not to go into them. Because on one hand, a good story is a driving element in the game, so like by solving more puzzles, you discover more of the story, which is for some people a very important thing in a game. On the other hand, we notice that some people they just like the puzzles so much they don't want to spend any time on the story. So we wanted to make sure that it's laid out that way that if you don't want to read those terminals, you don't have to. That's how we just deliberately set it that way, that each player can individually choose how much he wants to involve in the story and how much time he wants to spend reading the story.
It's not a kind of princess rescuing traditional, you know, 80s video game story. You are sort of dealing with some quite lofty ideas and ideals. Is it tricky to funnel that kind of stuff into a video game? I mean, it's happening more and more now, and people are certainly attempting to make more, inverted commas, adult and confrontational narratives nowadays. Do you feel like it is tricky to do so, and do you think this medium still has a long way to go when compared to things like, you know, novels and to a lesser extent movies?
Well, it is a different medium because it's interactive, and about it, that's what makes it interesting. I mean, for the developer, not just for the player, because it is harder and that's a bigger challenge. But it's interesting that you can allow the player to choose how he wants to. Now, without spoiling more of the game, but the player can choose how he wants to proceed in this discussion with the terminals, and he can the story can unfold in different ways, which is always harder to implement, but it's much more rewarding.
And what's next for Crow Team? Are you guys going to be looking... Is there a sequel in mind, perhaps, for Talos Principle? Or are you working on something entirely different now?
Well, it's I'm obliged to say that we are working on Series Sam 4. Anything else would get us shot, probably, by the same fans. And that is what we are... like. We are now also finishing this VR version. There's going to be Series Sam 3 VR, but those are all the projects that are being finalized, and Series Sam 4 is in deep in development. We're first going to finish that. But Talos 2 was just generally already announced. It's going to happen in the future, but first Series Sam 4.
Well, thank you for talking to me today, Alan, and we look forward to seeing where the franchise goes in future.
Thank you.
Out and about this week, you've just heard me chat to them, and now we're going to chat about the game itself. Talos Principle is out on iOS. We've had a brief discussion of what the game's actually about. You guys, did you play the PC version or any version of this?
Not yet. No. I haven't had the chance.
Okay, right. So I played it on PS4 when it turned up there. It'd already been out on PC for a while, I reckon. And like we've discussed already, like Portal influences a little bit the idea of a first-person puzzle in which you have to solve geographic puzzles by opening doors and moving things around and doing it in a way that doesn't involve violence, at least not on your part. You're just freezing things and stopping them moving, and it's very sort of thinky. The idea is it's in the same way as The Witness, which you've already discussed, the idea of it being all about problem solving in a 3D space, and then there's this underlying storyline of what the hell is going on here, and I'm a robot, and why am I here? My interest in it was about whether it controlled well on iOS, and as I've already said, it's kind of like in between, so you tap the ground to move around in this one. You can switch it to a dual stick type affair, like a standard first person game, but you by default just tap on the ground, move your character around, and then you tap on the items, these little tripod stands, and then you can, once you've got them in your hand, tap on an enemy and it will drop the stand, and then the beam will automatically go pew at the enemy and freeze them there. And that works well, especially for the locking on and freezing enemies part. So that system's very clear and streamlined. What isn't so great is doing things like trying to get away. So I've been in scenarios where I'm like picking the thing up, I'm putting it down, and then I'm like, right, I've got to drop this, and then I've got to turn around and leg it really quickly. And I found that very awkward to do by dropping it, swipe, swipe, swipe on the screen, tap, 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 tap on the floor to get away. And it's all felt a little bit like, this isn't comfortable, really. You lack that ability to maneuver quickly in emergency situations. And that's where it falls short on mobile. You can do twin stick, but I couldn't find a way to make it run. I was more nimble in those scenarios, but then when you're in twin stick mode, it's more difficult to pick up and place the items. So pick up and drop the little tripods which freeze enemies. That becomes trickier. So each method has its kind of downside to it. Regarding the rest of the game, it's still good. Like, I enjoyed the first one. I didn't complete it, but I played about 10-15 hours of it. It gets very, very tough towards the end, and obviously it's been downscaled, so textures aren't as impressive, and you know, all the usual things you would expect. Graphics aren't as impressive on a high-end PC, shock horror, but when you're playing it on a tiny little iPhone screen, then it doesn't matter half as much, and what's important here is the gameplay, and the game itself, still cool. Control system, not ideal, but works. So standard sort of scenario. I don't think it's as perfect a fit as The Witness was, because with The Witness, the puzzles themselves are those maze drag puzzlers, which are just built for touchscreen. This isn't built for touchscreen, but it's been, you know, forced on. But it works. It does work. So we'll have a review up on PG soonish, but at the minute, £4.99 or $4.99 available right now. Em, you've been playing the latest Guardians of the Galaxy episode?
I have.
And how does it hold up? I've heard good things.
Yep, surprisingly, it's one of the... I think it might be the best episode yet.
That's what people are saying. Why is it so good? Is it all coming together?
No, I mean, I finished my review earlier today, and you'll see that I have love for this episode, and I also have a lot of hatred for this episode, because it focuses very, very much on the character relationships between the Guardians, and you just have to make a lot of really hard choices.
Oh, okay.
Like, really hard. For one episode, I was a little bit emotionally drained afterwards. And there are a couple of points in it, because Drax takes like the main stage in this one, and I'm so glad he does. Because he's got this, in the Guardians films and the comics and things like that, he's got this tragic past that never really gets looked at, because it's all about Peter Quill.
Yeah, you get the occasional mention of his... It's more focused on in the first film where they're setting it up, the whole, you know, dead family issue.
Yeah, but when they actually, like, they give you a tiny little snippet of his past to look through, and then you get a little bit more dialogue from him, and it's actually really sad. You kind of then realise, like, oh, actually, he's lost his family. This is horrible.
Well, that was the nice bit in the latest film, the part two, where the lassie who can feel emotions just touches him and gets the flash of how he feels all the time, and she just breaks down immediately. That was a really nice visual, you know, communicator of, like, his tragic history, and he's just sort of sitting there stoic because he's used to it by now.
Yeah, that was one of the major things, but there's also, like, a kind of entrapment to the story as well, because no matter what you do, like, I've tried my best throughout the whole series so far to try and do what's right by the universe and also try and keep my gang of people together.
You're playing Paragon.
Yeah, so I'm like, oh, I'm trying so hard. But then at the end of it, and I checked out all of the different endings and things after I finished it yesterday, and you just can't win.
Classic Telltale.
Whatever happens, someone ends up really mad at Peter Quill when you've always done something wrong.
Oh, man. Bummer. But as I say, that is pretty standard. Like, they don't make them with happily ever after endings.
No, I know. But what they are definitely doing much, much better is that they've got a lot of tiny, tiny little details. Like before, you know, in the original Walking Dead series, you had, you know, your major events where you saved this person or saved that person from getting eaten, and then they'd continue through the story with you. Whilst this time, there's a lot of, like, if you say something wrong, they'll remember it, and they actually will remember it, and it'll affect your relationship with them.
Okay.
So it's becoming much more fine-tuned now. The ending sort of stuff is still exactly the same. Like, it was the same path, regardless of what decision you chose at the end of the third episode. It was the exact same beginning of the fourth episode.
Yeah.
But
the journey is slightly different.
Yeah, the journey is slightly different, but still equally frustrating. So I've woken up today equally saddened and just kind of just like, just frustrated.
Oh, no. Harrowing. Okay, so that's good, though. It means it's, you know, having an emotional impact. So I guess that's a positive thing.
Yeah. And the pacing was way better.
Okay, good. All right, then. So that's available at the minute on various platforms. I'm going to list them all. Moving on to the Switch for a minute. Glenn, you've been playing Sinemori X. Did that just come out, or has that been out for a little while?
It's been out on other platforms for a good few years now, I believe. But it's out on Switch this week.
Okay, so brand new one. I have played this. I've played it on mobile, of all things. So side-scrolling shmup. Yeah. It's quite good on mobile.
I didn't know it was on mobile. That's crazy.
Mm.
Yeah, it was one of those indie hits back on like the Xbox Live Arcade days, wasn't it?
Yeah, and for kind of good reason as well. I liked it on because it's a shmup, bullet hell shmup that moves at a slightly slower pace.
Yes, yeah, you can like freeze time and stuff and shoot things, lots of things. I like it. Plays well on Switch. Still looks nice today. I imagine they've done some tweaking to the visuals. I didn't actually play the original version, but it looks gorgeous. So
it was always a good looking game. Yeah, it's got that 2.5D thing where it's all the ships and planes and whatnot, and it's got a fun sort of, I don't know what it would classify as. It's not quite steampunk, but it's that sort of retro future thing, isn't it?
Yeah. It's got like, yeah, it's, I'd say it's kind of steampunky. It's kind of futuristic. It feels actually a little Star Fox at times. I should say a little like Star Fox.
Yeah. It's like, I know what you mean.
You've got like the animal characters. They chat to each other like when you're fighting.
And the
battling itself actually feels kind of Star Fox. It's very bullet hell, but you're sort of flying around ships to take them out at different parts. You know, that during boss battles. It all kind of feels like, and you know, obviously there's bits when you go on the ground like to shoot tanks and stuff, so it kind of feels like Star Fox at times.
Yeah. But I'm guessing this is a DLC only one, and I would imagine it's going to be on the cheaper side of things, because it was like, as you say, originally an XBLA number.
Yeah, let me double check actually on the price.
And they weren't dear, so I'd hopefully, if they're being sensible, between 10 and 15 quid, I would guess.
Oh, $30, which is... yeah. But, ooh. Well, actually, there's no buts. I mean, it has just launched on PS4 and Xbox One as well, so it's probably quite a revamped version.
Okay, that's what the EX is for. Maybe it's a sexed up.
Yeah.
Fair enough. So Sinemori X, that's out on Switch right now. Moving back to mobile for a minute, I've been playing Into the Dead 2, which turned up on iOS and Android today. We're recording this on a Thursday for a change. And it is the sequel to the first-person zombie auto-runner thing, which we actually liked back in, 2015, maybe? Because it just... It captured that thing of like, holy crap, they're all running right at my face. The auto-runner aspect of you have to keep constantly moving forward was a kind of a good vehicle for, well, we're going to put zombies in your way. And so it was extraordinarily low budget and, sorry, extraordinarily lo-fi. And suddenly you would just get these zombies sort of just appearing in the black through the fog. And then they would just be like, you know, as I say, charging towards your mush. And you have to be like, ah, and you're constantly dodging and trying to get away. You have a weapon, but you always have a very limited amount of ammo. And it was quite good. It was also one of the ones we first noticed them doing that. Here are three little challenges for each level. And then once you've completed those, they'll give you three more. So that the fact that it was kind of the same every time was augmented by the different challenges you had to do. Now that's common practice, but like a couple of years ago, that was still a slightly fresher idea. This one's a bit more violent. It feels like there are more weapons and more ammo. There's more ammo kicking around. And there's also different environments this time, like lighting situations. There's even a plot line which is underpinning the whole thing, where you're trying to get back to your wife and daughter and talking to them on the phone in between levels. There's now kind of a more direct campaign going on with chapters and whatnot. And it feels good. There's not a tilt control system this time, or at least it doesn't default to it. You're using sliding around your left thumb to move, and you're just tapping the right-hand side of the screen to fire. That's it. Very simple. And it works. Like, it's not going to change the world. It's very much more of the same, just spruced up a bit. But that thing was quite good. And so, you know, I've got no problem with it. It's all right. I played it for a bit and I even had some fun. So that's free App Store and Google Play at the minute. I also had a quick go on Kick-Ass Commandos, which is a game that Harry's just reviewed, which gave it a silver award. And it's, if I'm going to go really old, it's Ikari Warriors. And that's a, that's a deep cut, my friends. If I was to jump forward a little bit, then it's Alien Breed on the Amiga. That's still quite a deep cut, isn't it? But a top-down twin-stick shooter is what it is. So Hotline Miami or whatever. But it's done in that old-school 80s thing where you're running through a jungle, and that's why I said Ikari Warriors. And you are an Arnie type, and you have to get to the chopper at the end of every episode. That's the idea behind it. But the little hook it's got, beyond the ultra-violence, is that you have to rescue prisoners along the way, like POWs. And each time you rescue one, they are added to your little squad, and they follow you around, and they also start firing. So it's almost like in a bullet hell shooter when you get a power-up and it bolts something onto the side of your ship and suddenly you've got another weapon and it starts launching missiles. And as you move through the level, you get more and more and more. And eventually you're firing this like cloud of plasma and missiles and lasers and ammo. It's like that, only you're bolting people on. So eventually you just have this swarm moving around as a mass, all firing flamethrowers and fucking plasma guns and all that. And it's quite satisfying because, you know, once you're like two-thirds of the way through the level, you've got this mighty force. And every time you hit the fire button, it's like just an insane barrage of weaponry destroying everything. And most of the stuff is destructible as well. So trees and all the environmental bits like, you know, chairs and desks and barrels and all that can all be exploded. And it's quite good fun. It's just, you know, dumb arcade entertainment. We liked it, and I think it's probably worth a look if you are into that kind of gunishment stuff. It's a bit of giggle. Is there anything else that's out this week? I should go and check on the little list. I noticed that Neon Chrome popped up on Switch, another top-down shooter. That was also on mobile. We played that. We quite liked it. John Monday did the Switch review. You've had a go, Glenn. Is it all right?
Yeah, it's great. It was always good, and obviously with the physical controls, it's a little bit nicer.
Mm-hmm.
So I give it the thumbs up.
Good stuff. All right, then. And I noticed you've been having a go. Is it Lovers in a Dangerous Space-Time? That's an old game, but is this another new Switch title?
Yeah. I think it came out last week.
Ah, okay.
Pretty sure, but like later last week. It's good. I think it's definitely one of those games you need to have as like a co-op game, because I tried playing it by myself and it was good fun, but it was a different kind of fun.
Mm-hmm.
Where, like, I think I was sitting there and I was thinking, you know, if I had like a three friends around, we'd try and kill each other if we were trying to do this together.
So it's like a kind of, you're both on a spaceship, right? And the idea is it's cooperative multiplayer, and you're like, what are you doing? Solving tasks or something? I haven't played it.
You've got to defeat this big evil in the world by unleashing these trapped love bunnies and organizing yourself and your teammates around this massive ship with different consoles. Like, some of the consoles you drive, and there's a shield console, a map console, and several gun consoles.
Oh, I see. So it's delegating. You go here, you go there, you do this. No, quick swap.
Yeah, basically. So there's going to be lots of shouting involved, because it's all very, like, the big space bugs just appear out of nowhere.
Right, I see. I remember, I think I've got it on PS Plus, but I haven't actually played it yet. It's one of those. Okay, so that's out for Switch at the minute. I'll finally mention Tai Chi Panda 3 Dragon Hunter, because this is apparently a big deal. I've actually fired this up, and I'd look, it's incredibly good looking. It's a big old MMO, and it's, you know, a long-running franchise now, which is actually very, very popular around the world. I've only just, you know, been wandering through the tutorial stuff. I can say that it's an MMO. And all that comes with it. And it's just got loads and loads and loads and loads and loads of text and loads of people on screen, and you just tap on a thing and you go over there. And
over there.
You go over there and stuff happens with a panda.
You've actually got me intrigued. MMO things.
This might be yours, because it's proper slick. Like, I fired it up and it was like, Jesus, this actually it's really impressive. They've obviously got a lot of resources now after the first two have been successful. But you can download it for free on all the platforms right now. Tai Chi Panda 3 Dragon Hunter. We'll leave it there. I think it's crammed a lot in. Come back and join us next week for more of the chatter and, the subscribes and the likes and the reviews and the 5 stars.
And the being nice to us, please.
And the being nice to us, please, because I'm ever so needy.
Yeah.
He's such a petal. He's such a flower.
Just want someone to love me. Plus, I'm great, so, you know, do it. All right, yeah. Catch you all very soon. Take it easy. Love you lots. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.